Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Grant and I am an alcoholic.
Hi Grant.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a surrendering prayer. God, grant me to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. The restrooms are across the hall, candy corner, up a short flight of stairs. At this time, please take a moment, look at your cell phones, and make sure they're on silent or vibrate or off. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. Our preamble, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And if you would all please help me to welcome our panel, Ebony and Patrick. Let us begin. Page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions.
Hi, I'm Ebony. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, I'm Ebony.
I'll just introduce myself real quick. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since Friday the 13th of November 2015. I have a sponsor and she knows she's my sponsor. I do work with other people. I've gone through the 12 steps and try to the best of my ability today to practice these principles in all my affairs. Now to the paragraph. So our liquor was but a symptom. If somebody would have told me that alcohol was not my problem when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I probably would have had a lot of unkind things to say back, and I probably would have walked out because that's the kind of know-it-all drunk that I was. So when I went, by the time after I've worked the first three steps and I get to this part and it's telling me alcohol is but a symptom, it's time for me to do more work. You know, the causes and conditions. The fourth step was something that immediately when I walked in and I saw it on the wall, I decided I didn't need to do a fourth step. And I read this book and I'm working with a sponsor And I do my third step. And she says, all right, let's get into the fourth step. And I say, okay, let's go. And I procrastinated my fourth step for about a month, maybe a month and a half. And I say that because I had not done a thorough third step. So when I read this paragraph and it says, you know, we followed it at once by a strenuous effort, at once. As soon as I'm done with my third step, if I've done it to the best of my ability at that moment, I should be ready to move and put into the work to get down to the causes and conditions. And that's how I knew I wasn't ready to do a fourth step, because I was not ready and I was not willing to follow it with work and get into action immediately. So I had to actually go back when I did my first fourth step. I had to go back and do a thorough third step. So the causes and conditions, I'm trying not to talk ahead because I know what's coming in the following paragraphs. So it's hard for me to talk about causes and conditions without talking about the other things. But I had to open my mind and trust that alcohol is but a symptom and be ready to put into the work to learn what some of these causes and conditions were for me.
Thanks, Ebony. My name is Patrick Lanier. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Patrick.
Yeah, I like how you referenced the times there. You know, we got next, and then, you know, we have at once. That's what it tells me. So anywhere, I've always heard it best, anywhere in between there is when you should probably start doing this. And the thing is, you know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I came back here. I came to a couple meetings in 99. And it was to get a paper signed. And it didn't take me too long to figure out that the program was called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I could sign them papers myself, because I really didn't want nothing of what you guys were saying with your self-help and your little holding hands and the kumbayas. I'm good. And that's what I did. I sat out for it. It was 99 to 2009, so 10 years, and I come back here 10 years later with a whole different outlook. I need some help. And I started going to meetings, and you know, the steps were on the wall, and there was once in a while people were talking a little bit about them, but it wasn't a sense of urgency. There definitely wasn't the next and at once. It was like, take your time, go ahead. And see, for an alcoholic of my type, I don't have time. I really don't. And you know, I always like how it says here, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action. And I always point that out to men when I'm working with them, is that I used to live right near Cape Canaveral, and I used to watch rockets go up all the time in space shuttles, and it surely did not take them 4 months to get out of the atmosphere. I mean, they had the rocket fuel, they were going. And the thing is I have the rocket fuel because I was told back here in one that I'm doomed. That I'm doomed, no matter what, I'm gonna keep drinking. No matter what, good, bad, or indifferent. And then with step two, it told me that I started to have this willingness of a belief in something bigger in me. And then step three is when you guys hit me with the bat, dude. You know, so I had to take this prayer that said that I was gonna try to void myself of the bondage of self, you know? I was gonna start doing this higher power's will and not mine. And that I need to stay close to him. If I'm going to stay close to him and perform my work well, he's going to take care of everything I need. But the problem is that I show up to the show with a bunch of shit blocking me. I am blocked by all kinds of different things. And so then we got to get to this personal house cleaning. And you know, I mean, when I come out of steps one, two, and three, four shouldn't sound like it's that big of a problem. It really didn't to me. I mean, I sort of skipped the whole idea of the sex inventory. I was going to try to slide past that one, past my sponsor. But like, really? Resentments? Okay, great. I hate the police. I hate the district attorney. I hate my mother. I can give you a list all day. So, you know, we start going through this. And, you know, it does. It is hard to not jump ahead when it talks about causes and conditions because, you know, any person that comes in here suffering under the lash of alcoholism is going to think that alcohol is a freaking problem, you know? I don't know that my self-centeredness drove me to drive a car and get me a DUI that ended me up in Norfolk General. I'm not putting two and two together there, dude. I don't know. I know that alcohol was the leading factor of me getting into that car and driving it and crashing it. And so I'm not really, I'm not understanding completely. But luckily we have this coming up. Thanks.
Thanks, Patrick. All right, page 64. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our own makeup, which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations.
So this, the first paragraph, the sentence that references fact-finding and fact-facing. For me, it takes a lot of courage to truthfully, with the help of someone I trust, I chose, you know, a sponsor, and with my higher power, to actually be willing to see the flaws, because I come in here and I don't have any flaws really. You know, I just drink too much. And by the time I get to this step, I really want to learn and I want to grow and I want what other people in the rooms have told me. If I do this step, these things will happen in my life. And so the fact finding and fact facing for me, I had to be willing to look at things in my life that I had lied to Ebony about for years, for decades, you know. And it wasn't just some of the things that I did when I was drinking, you know, and to discover the truth about it. That's hard. I don't know what the truth is. You know, I've been separated from alcohol for a period of time by the time I'm doing this step, and my level of honesty is growing, and everything about this program is spiritual progress and not perfection. So for me to be willing to face the truth and put some things down on paper, to look at some things in my life and some feelings that I've had drinking and not drinking, because there are things on my fourth step that are not directly related to alcohol. But what I thought was, you know, I just drank, and I didn't realize that stuff that happened when I was in elementary or middle school when I wasn't drinking has a lot to play with in my alcoholism. You know, so I'm doing this, and they tell me self manifested in various ways. I have this sponsor, you know, she's great, and she makes me do work, and she made me highlight all of the words that had anything, any form of self, self-will, self-love, self, all of these things, to see self and how many times it's mentioned in the big book, the third and fourth step particularly. And I would have never thought that I was the cause of many of my own problems. You know, the book tells me over and over again in several different ways, I got the ball rolling. I did this, I caused this, I manufacture my own misery. You know, and I don't see those things until I put it down on paper and I'm willing to look with an honest eye. You know, I pray for my higher power to take away a lot of that deception, to take away the deception, period. Because I live in a world, when I'm doing this at first, where I'm not willing to see my flaws, I'm not willing to see my imperfections, I'm not willing to see my weaknesses. You know, this program is a program of paradoxes. I had to learn that once I was able to identify and see these flaws, how much power there is in them if I'm willing to learn and change and grow.
Thanks, Ebony. All right, so therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. You know, a business which takes no regular inventory. It's funny because my sponsor, thanks to his heart condition, I had to get a new one. And and so my new sponsor was like, when I asked him, I told him, I'm like, look, I'm not going to call you every day, and I don't feel like taking the steps right now. And he's like, all right, Patrick. It's funny, because this guy, old him, would have been like, get the hell out of my house. But on that day, he was rather understanding. But, you know, I've been thinking about that a lot lately, is that I got to take a regular inventory, because, I mean, I definitely don't do step 11 perfectly by any shot. It's very, very sporadic. But I definitely like to look at this like it's a business. You know, it says it here, my business. My business when I come here is pretty shitty. And like a lot of people feel sorry for me about how shitty my business is. You know, I have, in what's in my business, what am I selling? They're my facts, you know, my facts. And I like to hold on to them. I like to hold on to my facts. But I never really look at them. You know, these are old ass facts that I have never really, really taken much of a look at. And that's what I'm going to do here, is that I'm going to look at them. And I gotta find out what's damaged, what's unsalvable goods. And I got to get rid of them promptly. And I have never done that in my life. This is definitely, and it comes back to something I was told in the beginning, that Alcoholics Anonymous is a set of actions that goes against my best thinking. My best thinking isn't like, oh, my life's in a inferno right now. I think I better look at my facts, better look at my facts and see where I went wrong and who's the, get out of here. I've never, never in my life have I ever thought of doing that. Never. And so here we are, and now I have to do that. Now I'm sitting here and I'm looking at this. And you know, I work in a business, and they do inventory. They do nightly inventory. They do weekly inventory. They do quarterly inventory. They do a six-month inventory. They do a year inventory. They be doing inventory all the time. All the time. And they run a really nice business. And then there's me that's like, screw inventory, I ain't doing that shit. Oh, man. And I don't see how they go together. But, you know, as I read and I think about that, is that like, yeah, I need to start doing more inventory. But we're talking about, you know, the first time here. And once again, when I came into this, I was like, all right, I'm going to give it my best shot. And the thing was my inventory probably wasn't even that good. And that's the one thing I want to tell, like, people that are new. Like, go back to launched and next. Just do it. If it sucks, cool. That's great. You do not have to do this perfect, because you are not going to do this perfect. You are going to miss so many things. But you can come back. But the problem is we got all these people in meetings that are like, oh, my God, the fourth step. Oh, geez. But no, just do something. Do something that you don't usually do. You know, and that's it. Out of anything of me being here tonight, that's something I want to stress the most. If your inventory sucks, God bless you. At least you're doing something that you don't usually do. Thanks.
All right. Still on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relations, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with?
So I had to look up the word resentment because I come in here and I know everything, and I have a sponsor who tells me to look up definitions and to use a dictionary and not make stuff up in my head. So for me, when it came with resentments, the first thing I thought was, oh, being angry at someone, being mad. I'm mad at the world, so it's easy for me to make a list. But when I actually look up the definition of resentment, and I see it's a little bit, well, not a little bit, it's a lot heavier than Ebony's definition of anger. I'm angry at the moment. It's that burning, long-lasting, lingering irritation, you know. It doesn't mean that I'm super mad, but it's one of those, if I see you on the street, I might catch you slipping one day. And that's the kind of thing. Those are resentments for me. If you don't get it, I'm sorry, but it's my life. So resentments for me are things that I hold on to and things that irritate me and those things that are bothering me and I haven't let go that are blocking that sunlight of the spirit for me. And I further go on and I read that sentence talking about if I straighten up spiritually, the mental, like mentally and physically will follow. That is the opposite of Ebony's plan of recovery. Mm-hmm. I thought if I stopped drinking long enough, everything, and that's just the physical aspect for me. If I stopped drinking long enough, life will be good, I'll feel better. And I did start feeling better. You know, Joe and Charlie make that joke. I feel anger better, I feel happiness better, I feel sad better. That's the story of my life. You know, physically, I stopped drinking and I'm not vomiting all the time, I'm not shaking. But then I get into the big book and it's telling me I need to straighten out spiritually first because I have a spiritual malady. And the biggest part, that's the biggest part of my sickness, of that disease of my spirit, is this resentment. And so I'm like, okay, well, I can do that. I can list these people. And then my sponsor says, Ebony, you're skipping words. You know, we're talking about institutions and principles, other things I have resentments towards. And I don't understand what that means. Because at first, all I want to do is write down people I'm mad at. You know, it's all about me. Everybody needs to know I'm mad at them. And so I go further, and the way I did my fourth step, she gave me this table which has it broken down, and I didn't think that all of my resentments could be simplified down to just those few things of ambition, personal sex relations, or fear. My problems are so great, I need a longer list of options than just those few things. You know, so I put these resentments down on paper, not in my head, not, you know, tap, 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 this is done over here and over here. Like, I actually had to make a list, a concrete list, with paper and pencil. And the book gives me clear-cut directions of how to do a fourth step. You know, I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I don't have to think my way is better. I just take the advice, the suggestions given, I put them down on paper. You know, why do I want to get better spiritually? Why, you know, I'm okay as long as I'm not drinking and I'm feeling better. But the problem is, and I've done all of this reading, I've been going to meetings, I'm starting, I believe what's being told to me, you know, that eventually there's going to come a time and a place where I'm going to want to drink, or I will drink, and I will have no defense against that first drink, unless it's coming from that higher power, my higher power. So why do I want to be spiritually well? Because I want my higher power to be there. I want that relationship, because I know I cannot stay away from that first drink on my own. And
thanks, Evan. Resentment is the number one offender, huh? Number one. And that's, here we are again. I came here thinking alcohol was going to be the number one offender. But no, I get resentment. Destroys more alcoholics than anything else. And I've seen this play out in my life many a times. Because, you know, it's going to talk in here about fancied or real. But I start getting something in my head. And like, ah, that cat at that meeting, I know he doesn't like me, and I know he's talking about what I do. I am not coming back there. Screw him. And then, you know what? I thought that was my boy, but he was sitting with them, and they were both giving me that look. And then, you know, I start thinking about it, and then I'm driving home, and then, you know, oh, yeah. And you know what? I think he smiled at me, too. I think he gave me one of them little Cheshire Cat smiles, dude. They got it in for me. And that's my brain right there. It really is. And I'm like, boop, write that off, because that's quick. I am quick to write things off in my life. Just, boop, see you later. Go somewhere else. We'll just skip around towns, you know. We'll go to Virginia Beach. I hate these cats. We'll go to Chesapeake. Can't stand these cats. Oh, well, at least there's Norfolk. I haven't burnt all my bridges there yet. Give it time. But that's me all day, dude. And so, you know, I can see resentment, definitely. And then what happens when I don't got anywhere else to go? Guess I gotta fire up the laptop. We're gonna do AA online, and who knows how that's gonna work out. You know, who knows how that's gonna work out. But that's it. I'll just keep on running, and that's why it's always hit me too, fancy it or real, because I definitely fancy a lot of things. Think things about people, think that are so crazy and untrue. But this brain of mine, whew. And then I know, like you were saying, you know. We set them on paper. We make a list. A list up and down. I've never made a shopping list or anything across. I go up and down, and I always like to, when I'm working with someone, to make it easy, let's just start on the first list. Let's not try to reinvent the wheel here. Let's not go all the way over. Let's just talk about what you're resentful of. You know, people, principles, institutions. And I mean, I have had some people that I've worked with, they're like, I don't really have any resentments. I'm like, come on, dude, give me a break. Give me a break. And then I start breaking it down. I just start asking them questions. And, you know, I was thinking as Ebony was talking, like, about the whole doing the inventory thing. And there's two things that keep me from wanting to do another inventory. And it's totally fear and pride. And when I look over here, it's always that. Because I have like this huge, huge ego. And those are the two things that ding, like fear, oh, I don't want to be telling people this. I don't want to be telling people this. And then pride kicks in. You don't need to tell them shit, bro. You've been sober for 8.5 years. You ain't got to tell no one nothing. Your life is running perfect. And so those are the things I'm always battling when it comes back to inventory. And I think I was battling that on my first go around. You know, luckily I had a lot more fear of drinking and living a miserable life, so it was a little easier. But as I go on through this, it gets a little tougher to just, oh, let's go do an inventory. Yeah. All right, that's all I got. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Becky.
All right, we're on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
So, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. I have a little note in my big book that I wrote. It says, to the best of my ability at that moment. Because I'm a perfectionist. I'm an extremist by nature. I want to do everything 100% with extra credit, and I want star stickers when I'm done. And I read this, and from working with people, you know, a lot of alcoholics, apparently, we're all pretty much the same. And I just tell people the same thing my sponsor told me. Just do it to the best of your ability at the moment. It's okay. There's no wrong way as long as you're doing something. You know, I'm here to help you. I'm here to work with you the same way someone's worked with me. You know, and I keep reading. And this is one of the parts in the big book that upset me early on, because I come in here with a lot of excuses and a lot of self-knowledge and a lot of willpower. And this book is too old to know my life. And then I read this paragraph and I'm just like, how do they know all of the excuses? How do they know how I'm already gonna look at this? Everybody that I put down on my list for resentment, clearly they're wrong. I'm Ebony, they're them, that's why they're wrong. And that's where I wanna stop. I don't wanna look at the other stuff. I don't wanna find my part. You know, I don't wanna see where I'm wrong. I don't wanna see those flaws again. You know, but the problem is, I know there's more at this point. I've listed these names. I know there's more work to be done on my part. I know the inventory doesn't just stop with me making a list of names. I know there's other columns and I have to look at those. There's something my mom used to say to me when I was little. She would always tell me to pick my battles. And I'd be like, I'm picking the battles. I'm the winner. I'm the best. I win all the battles. And I read this, and that last line just reminds me of that. The victor only seemed to win. You know, I thought I was winning, you know, if I got the last word, if I made you feel less than me, if I made everybody in the room know I was better than you, then I won. I didn't think about, you know, all the other repercussions. I'm stepping on the toes of my fellows. I'm doing all of this stuff. And then when they retaliate, I get upset and I have this long resentment that's burning my soul up, and I don't know why people are treating me this way. They deserve to be on my resentment list, but I don't see that I thought I had won the battle years ago or a week ago when I, you know, was petty or said something out of pocket. That's how my mouth works sometimes. And when these things come down back to it, I didn't win at all. I'm the person here who's holding on to this anger. I'm the one upset. I'm the one using it as an excuse to drink. I'm the one using it as an excuse to not grow. You know, I didn't win anything, but I thought I did at that moment.
Thanks. Oh, man, that's funny, you know. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. And you think this was a lesson that I would have learned years and years and years ago. Like, I got so many misdemeanor assault charges. And, like, I lit these kids up, and I'm like, I got them, and I'm drunk. And then I'm, like, sitting in lockup Christmas with a bag of popcorn because they turned me in, and I'm like, yeah, I won, all right. I really won that battle. And, I mean, that's how it goes. And I love how it says that, you know, to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. Because, yeah, that is exactly as far as I've ever got. And the usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us. And we stayed sore. But I never, you know, this is, now we're in the second column. We're in the cause. Like, I'm quick. The first two columns are so simple to me. They really are. Like, you were you, and you did this. Boom, we are good. Like, I love to talk about the first two columns. I talk about it all the time. But then, you know, when I get into column three here, what I look at when I start to see what it affects. Huh, what does it affect? And for me, the first time, it was pretty much, you know, self-esteem, 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 right down the list, self-esteem, self-esteem. And there was a couple of security, but most of it was self-esteem. Once again, my ego, like, they did this to me, they did that. And with the thoroughness and honesty thing, that's what scared me when I was doing my first four step. I remember it. The whole time I'm questioning myself. The whole time I was going through these steps the first time, I'm like, am I doing this good enough? I'm like, I feel like I'm leaving stuff out. I don't think I've done this well enough. I was really, really worried. I didn't want to talk to anyone about that because I just want to hold up. But I was really scared that, like, I'm not doing this right, and I'm not going to get their little miracle that they all get, and I'm just going to end up in a couple of years getting drunk again. That was definitely a fear of mine. But I did the best I could. Once again, we're back at that. At the time, I did the best I could. And I sit here still sober, not doing any mind-altering drugs or drinking in, you know, 8.5 years. So I guess I was thorough and honest enough on that first one. I don't know. That's all I got on that.
Right on.
Thanks, Patrick.
All right, we're on page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison.
So this paragraph is like, I just love that first paragraph. I have the whole thing highlighted because I just am insane. But this sentence, the precise extent that we permit these, I didn't like that. Like, I don't allow myself to have resentment. That was my mentality. I don't permit having resentment. I don't invite them into my life. You know, these are well-deserved things that people have earned. You know, so I'm not doing anything. So how am I, you know, permitting something, these resentments? Do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? And I think about all of the times, like Patrick said earlier, all of the times that I've avoided going places or turned down invites or, you know, missed good opportunities in life because, you know, I don't want to go because so-and-so is going to be there, or I don't like that or how this is done and I'll never go to that place again. You know, I do that to this day with certain meetings. You know, I have room for spiritual progress, but you know, oh, that meeting is sick and they're not spreading a message. And this is just me permitting myself to, instead of living in the moment, being at that meeting, enjoying the fact that it's a group of people there focused on recovery, you know, or what can I bring to this? What message, you know, what can I share that is part of the message of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I see this, the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. That's heavy, maintenance and growth. You know, I thought if I came in here, I worked the steps, I have a spiritual experience, I'm done with this stuff now. You know, I'm good, I'm cured, I don't need meetings, I don't need a sponsor, I definitely don't need steps. But I read this and it's talking about maintaining something, maintaining this relationship I have with my higher power, continuously clearing out that wreckage, continuously trying to do right, and the growth, growing in effectiveness and understanding, you know, talking to the next person, helping, well, not really helping, but working with the next person through my experience, strength and hope. And that's a tall order. That's one of those reminders that I'm in this for the long haul. You know, it's not just a get sober and leave type of party anymore. That's not what I'm here for. I got sober and left a lot of places, and then I drank again. That's the story of my life. But I walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it tells me, you know, I want to maintain something. I want to grow in the spiritual experience. And then it tells me this: to drink is to die. I have a funny story real quick. I was at the grocery store with my daughter one day, and I was buying like cream soda or something. And we're leaving the store, and she's like, I can't believe you were drinking again. And I just look at her, and I'm like, miracle, it's cream soda. To drink is to die. And she looks at me, and it's just like, oh, my gosh, you're so dramatic. Why would you say something like that? This is just, oh, my God, those meetings make you crazy. But, you know, but I can say something like that to alcoholics, to drink is to die. And as extreme as it is, it's the truth. I don't think there's anything extreme about it. You know, if I harbor these resentments and I harbor these feelings, all I'm doing is letting that spiritual malady grow. That's the opposite of recovering. And if I'm letting that spiritual malady grow and I'm blocking that sunlight of the spirit that I like to shimmy in, then I'm more apt to pick up that next first drink. And that's not the life I want to live today. And I know if I'm permitting, if I allow these resentments, if I don't deal with them, if I keep saying, you know what, it's okay if that's a block, you know what, shove that one in there too, it's okay, that's a problem for me today, you know, because I start feeling bad. I have this conscience now, you know, I start feeling like, oh, I shouldn't have said that, I shouldn't have done that, what's my part in this? So I read this and I'm just like, you know, when I start going crazy, I start thinking about, I can't believe this. I can't believe they did this. Why didn't someone tell them this? Why didn't they? You know what? Ebony needs to let them know how it's supposed to be done right. Let me tell them how they're supposed to live their life. And I start going crazy again. And that hamster wheel and that brainstorm and all that stuff starts coming back. And I've lost that peace of mind. I've lost that serenity. And my old solution, when my brain's going, pick up a drink, it's gone. I don't want that anymore. Because for me, it truly is true, to drink is to die.
Thanks. Harboring such feelings. Harboring to keep safe, protected. Harboring my resentments. And I mean, these last couple of years, man, I have had some resentments. And I mean, I'm not going to get into that because it has nothing to do here. But I mean, politics, don't matter which side. But there's resentments all over the map. And I love to just dive into it head first. And I mean, I've had people there in my life, they're like, dude, I get you. Why don't you go do something about that? If it's really that important to you, go do something. Because I've heard your spiel time and time again. But I'm harboring these things, dude. You know, I'm keeping them safe and protected, and we're going to talk about it. And, you know, the insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. Like, that, dude, that right there, those three sentences, like, why you keep telling me I'm going to die over and over again? Like, really? You guys are really trying to drive that home. Drink again, insanity, die, death. But the thing is with me is, like, they used to tell me that when I come to AA, like, to drink is to die. And I was like, not buying it. Because, like, I got drunk plenty of nights and didn't die. And then the one time I really did want to die, and I was right there. I mean, I was, like, almost shaking hands with Jesus. Like, I didn't die, so I'm not buying that. But the thing is, like, death can have some other meanings for me, you know? Yeah. Like, what's death? What's being shut out from the sunlight of the spirit? What does that look like in my life? For me, it looks like anything, any relationship I have with anyone, they're all gone. All the bridges are burned. I'm all by myself. You know, I'd probably do a couple turns up in prison, and then I would get out at probably, I don't know, 60, 70 years old and have absolutely nothing. And that's the thing that scares me the most. Death is a welcome friend if I'm going to drink. I'd rather take death than that any day. Because for me, I just know that I'm going to be up in this, why I always say it, one-bedroom apartment, mangy cat. Drinking natty ice and rock gut whiskey until I die. And that's it. And I'm allergic to cats, but I'll still have one. I will. If that happens, I will get a cat. I swear to God. But that's my death right there. And then maybe my friend death does come one day. But the thing is, they ain't going to find me for a while. The landlord will probably find me when they have to come in, for when they come looking for the rent. Because I will have just shut off every relationship. That's what alcohol does to me. That's what it does, is that I'm really quick. Like I already said, I just write people off and keep it moving and just run from myself and run all across the United States, here, there, and everywhere, and end up all by myself. And, you know, for me, that's just, whew, that's horrible. And to think that all that's going to come because of a resentment. Interesting. But I definitely see, you know, the precise extent that I permit these. Do I squander the hours? I've squandered so many hours in my life just contemplating my hatred for this, that, and the other. Just sitting back and just thinking, like, oh. And then, you know, it talks about the grouch and the brainstorm. And you know, I've had to look it up, and there's different meanings. But I've come to find that the grouch is the slow burn. The little thing that, you know, pisses me off a little bit, and I just let it just keep on going in my head. Do, 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 do. And then the brainstorms, me just raging out. My little eye starts twitching. I'm just trying to just kill someone, just rip their head off. And it tells me that I can't live like that anymore, because that is exactly how I used to have them both running, grouchy and the brainstorm at the same time. Got some little resentments over here, and I'm raging on that person over here. And it tells me that it's not for me. That it might be the dubious luxury of a normal man, but for alcoholics, these things are poison to my soul. Thanks.
Thanks, Patrick.
All right, we're still on page 66. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, The wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
So this fancied or real, people had the power to really dominate us. I love the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's the first thing that helped get me sober and interested in actually jumping into a plan of recovery. I say that because there are some fellowship statements that I hear in the rooms that make me cringe inside. And one of them is, victims don't recover. And I say that because there are things in people's lives, and whenever I'm at a fourth step meeting, I always feel it necessary to share this. There are things in people's lives where they are truly a victim. There are things in my life, let me speak first person, firsthand, where I am truly a victim or was a victim. But the big book does not let me use that as an excuse of not doing the work. Mm-hmm. Fancied or real, what that means to me, you know, for me, it's easy to see the fancied things, those things where when I actually do it and I write it down and I can see, you know what, that's not even a real resentment. I made that up, or that's not that big of a deal, or I just feel stupid that I put it on my list. Once I break it down, I'm like, oh, wow, you're really mad at that. You're upset over that, and I can let that go. It's the real things that have happened in my life. Those are the things that make me feel justified. And those are big problems for Ebony. When I feel justified resentments, justified anger, justified any type of justifiable excuses. You know, so I read fancied or real. There are points in my life where I really am a victim. And I had a problem with doing this fourth step. You know, I talked to my sponsor about it. And she tells me, you know, because we don't want to jump ahead, but I have to find my part in things. So I'm looking at this list, and I put it down, and I'm trying to find my part in a real situation in my life. How am I selfish? How is this self manifested in any kind of way? And my sponsor just looks at me and she says, sometimes your only part in a situation is to practice love and tolerance and forgiveness. And that's the only part. Victims do recover. Victims recover if I process things correctly. If I do a thorough inventory and I find my part in things, and my part doesn't mean I'm to blame, but sometimes my part is I have to practice that love, tolerance, and forgiveness of my higher power. You know, it follows this up with a sick man prayer. I am queen of saying my own sick man prayer. God, this is a sick man. Let me not curse him out. The end. I don't, you know, that's my prayer. It used to be my prayer. And I'm getting better at, God, this is a sick man. How can I be useful? You know, let me not be angry. But that's a big jump for me. You know, usually it's like, this is somebody sick. Keep my mouth shut. That's the best I can do sometimes, and sometimes that's good enough for me. But I am growing. Sometimes I say the full prayer. But this, back to the fancied or real, victims do recover. Sometimes my only part is to process things and to practice forgiveness. And the reason I need to do that is because if I hold on to these events and situations in my life, they will continue to block the sunlight of the Spirit. I can be the victim or I can be the victor. You know, I can be the victim of circumstances and continue to be the victim in a situation and carry it repeatedly in my life. and use it as an excuse for my behaviors and my actions and drink over it, because that's what I did for a long time. You know, but the fourth step and my higher power gave me the ability to process some traumatic events in life and to find my part of forgiveness. And that's the best I can do. So I always, when I hear victims don't recover, I understand the thought of it and what it means. But the truth of the matter is I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And it's because I have taken the steps and I've put in the simple actions of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that is my experience. So that sometimes there are some things, but that's still not an excuse.
Thanks, Ebony. We turn back to the list where it held the key to the future. Ooh, the key to my future. So I guess I didn't have a future until I got here, and now you guys got the key. That's cool. You know, we prepared to look at it from a different angle, and yeah, there is some traumatic things. Some horrible stuff happened to me when I was a kid. And you know, I carried that thing for years. In years, and I got as much out of it as I totally could. I did. And not once did I ever go and seek to talk to a counselor about it or do anything except use it to get me attention and to get me people to feel bad for me. And I did that, you know? And that's something. So when it comes to parts, you know, that was the part I found in there when I had to do that, when I had to talk about that. You know, when I did my list, one of the people that got right to the top was my dad. And I always find that just so hilarious. Like, my dad got, like, number one. I think, no, he got number two. He got number two. But he was right there. And, like, this man did nothing but the best he possibly could for me then and now. He's gone through things that I would never do, especially for an adopted child. Hell no, your ass would be done at 18. I'm done with this. But this man just always showed up and did whatever. And he got number two on my resentment list. And like at the time when I wrote it, I was like, sure enough, dude, you weren't there. You were in the Navy. You were overseas. You weren't there enough when I was a child. Then you divorced my mom. And then you took off and weren't around a lot. And I just got to run the streets wild. And boom, totally made sense to me. Because remember, I'm maladjusted to life. I'm full flight from reality. And like when I read that in the book, I'm like, eh, maybe to a little bit. And then it's that next line, to a great extent with some of us, to a great extent with me. Like, I am out of my mind to that man made number two. And as I'm going down the list and as I move through these columns, I move over to four and five, then all of a sudden it just starts to hit me. Like, if I don't see where self have manifested in my life and where I've just totally blamed everything, never taken responsibility for anything in my life, it's always somebody else's fault. I have this long list, and it's funny because the long list that I've used as a crutch my whole entire life has now ended up on my resentment list. And oh, they go together. Huh, they mesh perfectly. Imagine that. And you know, and then it goes over here because yeah, some people, they really just suck. And it says, and I love it, like, am I capable of sucking like them? Because I've heard it, you know, I heard it when I first started coming in here. Someone pointed it out to me, and they probably heard it from somewhere else, but I am the guy that wants justice for everybody and all the mercy in the world for me. I want forgiveness on top of forgiveness on top of forgiveness. But you, no. Justice. Go see the judge, mofo. And that's just how I've always been. Never once do I ever look like, wow, am I capable of that? Because pretty much everyone in what they did in that second column in my drinking career, I've definitely been capable of all that. All the things that have been done to me. Maybe I have most of them, maybe I have done. Some of them I haven't, but I was capable of doing any of that because I was a sick person just like this person that I'm so twisted up about. And so I love how it says here, you know, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful? Too bad I couldn't do that right away, because it never happens right away. First, it's like, do I punch him? Third, you know, like, there's this whole list before I get to, like, oh, man, God, I'm definitely capable of that myself. And then, you know, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. That will be done. Yeah, that prayer definitely doesn't come out as quick as it should. But hopefully, you know, over time it'll come out quicker. Thanks.
Thanks,
Page 67, our last reading. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight.
That invisible fourth column that I never naturally do is, where have I been wrong? Where is Ebony responsible? What have I done? So I didn't want to do a fourth column. The end. I didn't want to, because that's more of that fact-facing and fact-finding that it tells me this process takes. And it's more of that courage that I need. That, you know, I have to do this. I need to find out. You know, part of this process is me clearing up the wreckage of my past. You know, so I have to look and see where I've been wrong. And the funny thing is, as I'm doing this, I see patterns. I see repeated patterns in Ebony's behaviors. You know, I think I'm just making a list of resentments at first. And then I look at this invisible fourth column. It's not invisible now because I've written it down. My sponsor made me write it down, which I thought was ridiculous since it's invisible. But anyways, and I also told her we dropped the word blame, and she didn't have that because I'm still to blame for some stuff. But, you know, I'm doing this, and I see these repeated patterns in my behavior. And I see that I continuously do the same set of things with the same set of motives over and over. And a lot of these resentments I have are the same resentment with just different names attached. And that's crazy to me. Like, oh my gosh, I hate the whole world, but it's really, Ebony, you keep doing these things. You keep setting these expectations. You keep thinking this and doing this. And it all boils down to, I'm selfish, I'm dishonest, I'm self-seeking. And I'm scared, and I'm scared of everything. You know, I believe the dishonesty and the selfish and the self-seeking falls right into that fear. And it's hard to see that. For me, it was very hard to do that without working with a sponsor. I keep bringing that up because I could not have done a fourth step without having a sponsor or working with someone. You know, I'm the type of person who's like, well, it doesn't say I have to do it with a sponsor, but I would not have done it without a sponsor. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Ebony. Shoot. All right. We're almost out of time, so I don't know. I'm just going to run over the first thing I said again. If you're new and you're sitting on a fourth step, I don't know. They told me and how it works. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. So just do something. Just put down some writing. You know, maybe, you know, set aside some time every week and just write for a couple hours. I mean, what's 3 hours a week? You know, if you're new, that's the only thing I really want to stress. I don't want to keep you guys here all night. Yeah, and it does turn out, you know, with the fourth and the fifth column, that something became blatantly obvious to me, that I ain't never lifted a finger for anybody unless I was getting something out of it. I was selfish to the extreme, and I still am. It's still a battle that I face all the time, and I know the only one that's going to help me win that battle is God, but it is a son that plagues me still. But you know, I have a chance today. A chance to try to be a little less selfish. And thank you guys for letting me come here and share tonight. Thanks.
Thanks, Patrick.
All right, we have a seven tradition. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers, although the amount of our contribution is secondary to their spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. We may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as we used to. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Ralph, alcoholic.
Hey, Ralph.
New Day Group will be open all day on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, from 6 a.m. to about 11 p.m. There'll be food, and they'll be meeting every hour and a half, so you're welcome.
Thanks, Ralph.
Thanks, Ralph.
Okay, no more other announcements. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands.
What up?
Right. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety or just want to get your first name that we might welcome you?
Hey, Suzanne.
Hey, Suzanne.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Hey, Galvin, welcome.
Keep coming back. All right. There's literature over yonder on the table. If you can fold it, it's a piece of paper. You can take it. If it's a book, it's got a cover. You got to ask us what it costs. And if you need help paying for us, I'm sure we can help you out with that. See a home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you. Do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Feel free to come up and talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can you all just give this wonderful panel a round of applause?
You did a wonderful job.
Thanks again to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, which is at 21st and Colonial. If you just go down Colonial, you're bound to find it. Can I get a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
My name's Aaliyah and I'm on parole.
Hey, hi, Aaliyah.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. Obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until this.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And in closing, we'll round up and do our usual prayer.
Whose Father?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come,
Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
I don't know what this does.